Lately, I've been really trying to upgrade my wardrobe, leaning into pieces that feel effortless, comfortable, and flattering. That's why my go-to is Quince. Their fabrics feel elevated, the fits are flattering, it just works. My latest additions to my wardrobe have been their lightweight cotton cashmere link stitch dolman sweater and French terry wide leg pants. They both fit me so well, and that's not always easy. I just love how all the colors mix and match and feel so chic without breaking the bank. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And that's because Quince works directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middlemen. Refresh your everyday with luxury you'll actually use. Head to quince.com/POR for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/POR for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/POR. Your home is more than just furniture. It's an extension of you. And even small details like a rug can completely change how a space feels. I love Ruggable because they prove you should never have to choose between a home that looks great and one that's actually livable. Our living room rug was looking a bit dirty lately, so we decided to get a new one from Ruggable. I was instantly drawn to their plush all-in-one rugs because I just love a soft texture, especially when watching TV on the couch. We went with the Finley Smoke Gray plush rug. It's really made our space feel so much cozier, and I love that you can just throw it in the wash when needed. It's been so much easier to keep this rug clean because we're often guilty of eating while watching TV, and we need a rug that suits our lifestyle. If you're looking for a high-quality look that's stain-resistant, machine-washable, and has built-in non-slip backing, then Ruggable is for you. Refresh your home with Ruggable.com. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with promo code POR at Ruggable.com. That's Ruggable.com and use code POR at checkout. I'm Julie Krafcik.
And I'm Yue Xu. This is The Psychology of Relationships. Ever feel like the closer you try to get, the more your partner pulls away? And the more they distance, the more anxious you become? That anxious avoidance cycle can leave both people feeling misunderstood, exhausted, and stuck. In this episode, we're joined by Mark Groves, human connection specialist, author, and founder of Create the Love, to explore what it really takes to shed those dynamics and build a relationship 2.0 that feels a lot more secure for both parties. Mark isn't just teaching theory here. He's lived it. He opens up about his own relationship journey with his now wife, Kylie Macbeth, and the work required to move from disconnection to conscious partnership. We unpack the psychology behind runner-chaser dynamics, anxious patterns, and codependent behaviors, and why these cycles persist even when two people deeply care about each other. Mark shares how taking ownership of his own emotional responses, triggers, and survival strategies became the turning point for real change, not by fixing his partner, but by healing his side of the dynamic. Because it's often easier to blame an avoidant partner or to leave a relationship altogether than it is to slow down and look inward. But without that self-responsibility, the same patterns tend to repeat, just with a different person. Whether you're navigating conflict, feeling disconnected, or simply wanting to be more proactive about the health of your relationship, this episode offers insight into how relationships evolve and how we can evolve with them. Remember to subscribe to The Psychology of Relationships on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen, and leave us a 5-star rating. This is The Psychology of Relationships, and you're listening to an episode that just might change the way you show up for love. Enjoy. Reuniting with your ex, something I've definitely thought about at some points in my life with exes, but this couple, Mark and Kylie, were successful in reuniting and then establishing a strong relationship. And that's what we're going to talk about today. What does it mean to reunite with your ex and to basically redesign your love again? So we've got Mark Groves, who we've been following for so long, and we're so happy to finally get him on our show.
Yeah.
How are you, Mark?
So good. I'm so excited to be here. You know, whenever anyone talks about getting back together with your ex, I kind of sometimes forget that we did that, you know, because it feels like quite a while ago. even though it wasn't, it was what, 2020-ish? Yeah.
And it probably just because when you get back together, it's a different relationship.
Completely. Yeah.
So let's start from your relationship with Kylie. You were together for 5 years, then you broke up, then you got back together. So take us back to relationship 1.0, as you like to call it. How did you both meet and what was that love story in the beginning?
You know, we met on the often undiscussed dating app Instagram. And,
how very Gen Z of you.
Yeah, right. Let's be honest. Everyone's dropping in the DMs, which I dropped into her DM.
Okay.
And we had been following each other for a while, sent her a message, told her I'd love to connect beyond the gram. And she wrote me back. No games. Like, I remember she wrote me back. At that time, you had to send a picture when you sent a message.
Oh, wow.
And I sent a picture of a sunset from Grouse Mountain. She sent a picture back of a sunset somewhere in the desert. And she wrote me back. And I remember writing her back and saying, well, that's about the best possible reply I could have imagined. Because there was just like no game, which is how it should be.
Yeah.
You know, that it's not forced, that there's not like some sort of strategy that has to go into it. Which I'm not negating that I think we need like the skill set when it comes to dating and relating. There is a skill set for it. So yeah, in relationship 1.0, she eventually moved to Vancouver. And in that relationship, there was always this sort of nudging feeling for me that Kylie wasn't fully in it. And we were traveling in New Zealand and Australia. And I remember I went for this run and I'm like thinking while I'm on the run, I'm just so tired of like, I'm not here to chase anybody. And I feel like every time I get close to her, she withdraws. And then I have to get close again, and then she withdraws. So I came back from the run and I said that to her. And she said to me, yeah, you know, there's a dream I had that I've not told you about, but it's been really, really living in my psyche. I've been afraid of it. And it was that she was in a burning house and she had to leave, like get out in the relationship. The burning house was our relationship.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, our relationship's good, you know, by every other metric other than the burning inferno that is supposed to represent it in a dream. But the actual experience of the relationship on the sort of skill set, relational, you know, are we healthy? Are we not? Yeah. We would have checked healthy, but on a deeper level, there's this subtle fear of not staying for Kai. And there's this fear that I'm in a relationship with someone who's not turning towards me. Like her, if you think about it sort of figuratively, her shoulders are turned sideways and I'm turned directly front facing.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting is that if I was truly in discernment, because I'm sure for a lot of people listening or watching that we can relate to this feeling of just choose it. Like, just why don't you just turn towards, like, it's not fair. You're the one who needs to do the work. You had the damn dream. I didn't have it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I recognize that I actually should have in that information turned my shoulders because that's discernment. Like, you can't build a relationship with someone who's not building a relationship with you, who's like, still, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
People can be not sure. That's a normal human experience. But what do we do with the not sure? Well, I did what most people do, unfortunately. And we spent 3 more years in that not sure-y. And what we did was we started to pathologize it. You know, I had already been studying relationships and teaching them. And if you think about it in relationship, it's like, well, why do people who teach relationships, therapists, coaches, doctors, nurses, right? All these types of service-related providing roles are people who are highly attuned and likely had a role in their family where they took care of people.
Yeah.
So what better job in the world than to monetize your survival strategy? But here I am in a relationship. I'm like, well, you have some relational challenges. We're in a relationship. I've got value now. Yeah. You can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
And so we went to psychotherapists. We did coaching. We had mentors. We did all the things. Red attached, of course. And when she learned about avoidance, she was like, I'm so avoidant.
That's me.
Yeah. And what ended up happening was towards the end of that, there was a deal breaker on the table for me. And that was when I wanted to have kids by.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that.
Yeah, I was like very clear about that at the very beginning of our relationship. And she had agreed to that at the beginning of our relationship. And then about 3 years into that relationship, she changed it. She was like, hey, you know, that seems a little soon for me. Can we do like, you know, I can't remember. It was like another year. And I was like, okay, I felt into it. And I'm like, I can negotiate that.
Yeah.
But then she went to change it again. And I was like, no. Because in hindsight, I can see that when people change a deal breaker, they're often trying to get the other person to stand in their deal breaker and leave. Mm-hmm. And just to wrap up relationship 1.0, is we recognize that actually, if this relationship required Kylie to believe she was a problem, like she had a problem in order to exist in it, then it wasn't the relationship I wanted to create. It wasn't the one she wanted to create. I said to her, like, if you need to think you're broken to be in a relationship, maybe the information of the burning house is actually brilliant.
Yeah.
Maybe it's actually saying, instead of like going to all these people and going to like a Jungian therapist and figuring out like dream meaning, why don't we just take the dream at its wise value instead of it being this like deep metaphor of something else? You know, maybe actually we should trust it and that you're not broken, but you're brilliant. Yeah.
Interesting.
And maybe there's something that you're feeling that I don't. Mm. And now I can easily label that what she was feeling was the trepidation to create a relationship that required two people to self-abandon. Because it looks like she's self-abandoning in order to stay too. But I am as well, because no one in their right mind, if we were just looking at a checklist, if we were like, should you build a relationship with someone who is feeling like they might have to leave any day? Yeah, right. If you want a life of hell, if you want to be anxious for the rest of your life, then you'll go to the doctor and wonder why you're anxious. But it's pretty obvious why you're anxious, because you're not finding your voice. You're not in choice. You're putting your body in relational circumstances that are not actually healthy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have so many questions.
So many questions.
I guess like the one that stands out, it's like 2 years in, you're starting to feel this. Like, what was it that made you feel like it? You were saying, like, all intents and purposes, the relationship is running smoothly. It appears healthy.
And she moved to Vancouver.
Yeah. Like, and it seems like she's telling you, like, she wants to have kids and move it. But there's clearly something in your gut that's telling you this isn't right. Can you pinpoint that now in retrospect?
No, I could just pinpoint the distance. Like, I could feel somatically in my body that there was a subtle, that she wasn't all in. That I was like ready to choose this fully. You know, that's what's so interesting is what I learned through the process. And I think this is so true for if anyone resonates with more my side of the story, which women tend to resonate more with my side of the story, is that there actually is a bypassing of choice. Like there's a bypassing of being mindful about who you're choosing to create a relationship with. And that's what I really learned is like, I had blown by all of my own somatic senses that I shouldn't continue to invest. But what I do know that's relational is that if you feel that and you bring it forward, there is possible healing and reorientation. Like maybe the person has complex trauma, you know, maybe they have stuff that they just don't realize that makes them want a distance. And there's an opportunity to work through that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't get worked through unless you bring it forward. And I think the real work for people who might identify more with my story is that you have to bring it forward.
Yes.
The truth has to be laid at the altar of the relationship.
So were you having those conversations in relationship 1.0?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were. Really, like we would find some sort of maybe peace or like a sense of we were building something and then it would show its place again. If I'm being really honest, it was there the whole time, but subtle. Like there was just a knowing in my body, like I know deep in my unconscious, but it would come to my conscious mind was like, how do you build something with someone who had a dream that they might leave at any moment?
Yeah.
And when we were working with the psychotherapist, I remember having this conversation with him and her. And I just had this deep realization and this grief because in the awareness where it like really was confronted, I remember thinking like I had so much sadness and I was like, I learned somewhere that this is normal.
Yeah.
Like I learned that someone not fully showing up for me is normal.
Yeah.
And that's just my template. And it was just like such a beautifully sad moment of recognition, you know, that the context of it is important.
My heart's going, it's like screaming, yes, yes, yes. I feel that so much. And in my last relationship, there was a point where John Mayer's song, Slow Dancing in a Burning Room, kept playing over and over again in my head. And I thought, that's exactly what we're doing. We are in love, but in a burning room. Like this is all going down at some point. And your description of your partner being turned away from you and you keep turning towards them is so real, because I thought a good relationship is if you have that kind of disconnect, you're the one helping your partner turn, like put your hands on their shoulders,
Right.
And help them turn towards you, or bring someone else in to help them turn towards you. And you're right. You're missing your own choice of turning away and saying, this is not the relationship I want to be in. And, you know, this last partner I had, he kept saying, like, why do I feel like I'm the only one with problems in this relationship? Why am I the one getting all this help? What is wrong with me? And you're right. Like, if you feel like you're the one with the problems in the relationship, that's probably not a healthy relationship to be in. So thank you for validating all that.
No, of course. And I resonate. I mean, that I got shivers. The challenge with relational teachings in general, on social media or just in general, is that we don't identify that actually the person who needs to fix shit actually has to hold the identity that they're broken in order to keep facilitating the person who needs to help all the time. So like, in order for them to stop being broken, the person trying to fix them has to stop giving them shit to do. Instead, we're like, here's what I need. Here's what adulting is. Go book the fucking therapy appointment yourself.
Yes.
Like, if you don't, but I'm not doing it anymore. And so it's like, we think I'm inviting them to be an adult. But it's actually the adulting for ourselves is to stop, because both are child behaviors. One, the person just is like, I'm a fuck up. Like, nothing I do is enough.
Yeah.
If you think about it, it's almost like learned helplessness. And the other person is, their adaptive strategy is, I'll never be enough. So I like have to be the fixer and the care for. And when you're done with that pattern, there's an exhale, but there's also a lack of trust, because what we're really saying is, I'm actually ready to relate to you and you relate to me as two healthy adults or two people building that. There's a lot of people who don't know how to relate to each other from healthy places. They actually need a problem. And I'm sure we can all or have been that.
So I guess the question, and this is clearly you led to a breakup, but like, when do you realize that this just isn't the right person for you versus you need to both own your shit and work through it?
Yeah, you know, in the book, we really wanted, the reason we wrote the book was because we didn't have a path for ourselves, you know, and we really were like, well, whether you're single or dating or in a long 25, 30 year marriage, every part of the book applies, because what it does is give you context to like why you do it. And that's so important, the context, because the context depersonalizes it.
Yeah.
Because if you go like, oh, well, I identified it as a problem, and it was because, let's say, my mom always criticized me, and that's, she always led with criticism, et cetera, et cetera. I now have some understanding that that was the adaptive strategy I needed in order to get to where I am, which is here, and now I can make changes. And so there's that aspect of being able to contextualize it and then actually get into creation mode. What do I want? And taking a pause from relational patterns, like one of the things we do and we suggest in the book, we call it a sacred pause, but especially for people who are dating. And it's funny because I'll say to someone like, just take 3 months, no engaging with, if you're, you know, if you're heterosexual, no engaging with the opposite sex for 3 months, whatever your gender preference is. No texting, no sexting, no trying to draw their gaze, and you will see it as a drug. And what's funny is people will be like, well, I've already done that. I've been single 4 years. I'm like, you haven't done it. Trust me. Yeah, it's very different. An intentional sacred pause than, you know, a dating and relating and swiping. But getting back to your original question is like, how do I begin to know? Well, the first part is that whenever I'm working with a couple, it's always like, let's actually just put staying together or breaking up off the table for a second. Because if your only intention is to stay together, then you might be actually missing valuable information. If one person doesn't want to be in that creation mode, it's already a game over. A lot of times couples go to therapy and one person doesn't want to be there and doesn't want to change.
Yeah.
Right.
So my space in that, and we invite this in the book too, is what is actually the radical truth that exists in you right now? Because even if you're afraid to say, well, I'm afraid that the relationship won't work. Great. Let's bring that truth into this space. Okay, I'm afraid that they'll cheat. Okay, let's bring that truth into the space. All of these truths exist anyways. And what ends up forming through the sacred pause, through the contextualization, is what we call in the book, like the great thaw. It's like actually thawing out your nervous system and getting back into your body. Because, you know, if we're the ones who are like staying turned towards all the time, it's more complex than this, but on some level, we're in a functional freeze. because I'm frozen. Like, there's no way if someone said, I'm not sure I want to choose you, that I should be like, oh my God, I love you so much.
Right.
Like,
right.
I'm going to send you flowers. Right. I'm going to over pursue you now. Right. Like, we would never say to a little kid who's, you know, got someone who says, I'm not really sure about you. We'd never say, oh my God, go convince them. Mm-hmm. We'd say, we love you so much. You do not have anything to do. And so the deeper sense that comes in is the ability to choose. Now, a lot of our relationships were built on previous agreements, previous selves, right? And so really relationships over time are two people changing on some level side by side. I wouldn't say together, but like side by side. But a lot of relationships initially are actually require the abandonment of self, right? They require the like, I don't know what I need, what I want. My life's about what you need. The other person's like, I mean, I have to be broken to be in this relationship. So, you know, I'll create needs for you. Mm. And so there's that differentiation is so important. And so I think I'm always like, there's a few questions I always ask people when they're like, should I stay or go? It's such a complex question.
Yeah, it is.
And it requires so much nuance. But what I will say is the first question I ask is staying or going leaving yourself? Mm-hmm. Because whatever your normal pattern is, things get hard.
Right.
And again, this is outside of the context of abuse. This is outside of the context in a relationship with a narcissist or a sociopath. Get out.
Yeah.
But because often in those circumstances, we're like, if only I worked harder. It's like, if you're working harder is the thing you normally do, maybe stop.
Yeah.
And the other question I think is just powerful is, even if your partner changed everything and did everything you want, would you want to be with them? Mm. Asking someone, do you actually respect your partner?
Mm. Yeah.
Do you like them as a person?
As a friend.
Right. Even. Like, do you actually like their values? Do they disgust you? Like, why would you want to work out a relationship with someone who disgusts you? So coming back just like to yourself will lead to all of it. Anyways, like, should I stay or go will be like, who am I? What do I want with my life? And what am I committed to? Is that possible in this relationship? Yes or no?
I want to dive into this even more. But before we do, let's take a quick break to hear from our partners.
Okay, we talk a lot on the show about attraction, relationship dynamics, and why we fall for people who are completely wrong for us. And this book captures all of that. I just finished reading Behind Closed Doors by Shane Rose, and I could not put it down. It's so spicy, suspenseful, and genuinely addictive. So here's the setup. A woman's life gets turned upside down when danger finds her at work, and suddenly she's whisked away to an ultra-private billionaire enclave as the live-in nanny for this brooding, powerful, impossibly magnetic single dad. Forced proximity, a secret society, and a hero who is protective, possessive, and very much off-limits. The tension? Absolutely unhinged in the best way. As someone who loves studying relationship dynamics, this push and pull in this book hits different because it's not just romance. There's real suspense and secrets unraveling the whole time. It's think Desperate Housewives meets spicy dark romance. Behind Closed Doors by Shane Rose, book one of the Kept in Paradise series, is on sale now wherever books are sold in print and ebook. Staying present in a relationship might be really difficult sometimes because it's not just one date. It's every night on the couch, every meal, every wait. What did you just say? Moment. That's where Brick comes in. Brick is a simple device that helps you put boundaries around your phone so you can actually be with your partner. You just pair the device to your phone and it locks distracting apps, and suddenly you're not half listening while trying to reply to texts or checking Instagram. Now, it's not about cutting out technology. It's about choosing presence during dinner, before bed, or when you're having a real conversation that deserves your full attention. Because relationships don't fall apart from one big thing. They fade from too many small moments of distraction. If you want to be more present with your partner, check out Brick. Go to getbrick.app/POR show for 10% off. That's getbrick.app/POR show.
So what made you two decide it was time to let it go the first time around?
There was that part of like, maybe there's brilliance and we've done everything else that we thought we could do. There's no more tools. Mm. Maybe actually this is the most loving thing we can do. And that led to us doing a closing ceremony, mm-hmm. We hadn't seen each other at the end of our relationship because I was traveling for work and we had been in the discussions, and then we had a FaceTime call kind of as the final call. And Kylie had said to me, why would you want to stay? I remember she said this to me, why would you want to stay with me? Like, I'm unsure. And I'm like, no. Like, you don't get the easy way out. Like, you have to choose it. to go because you have never done that. And so we had this final call where I was like, you need to say the words, because I recognized that actually it was in her choosing to leave, which I could honor. I didn't, right. You know, I remember saying to her, like, I had left an engagement when I was 27 and I would have been desperate to hear, you know, what I had said to her was, I love you. I want to create a life with you. But if you, for whatever reason, can't do that with me, I love you and you can go. And I wished that there, I had had the same level of sort of like, it was through the experience of my previous engagement that I had the tools and the language to say that. Because it was true. I just wish someone could witness the deep need that I had to go. I didn't know why, but I just had to. Mm-hmm. And so I could see that in her, this like, she was getting sick. She was like trying to figure this out. And I was like, you don't know. Like, there's nothing more to figure out. And in that conversation, you know, there was a lot of tears. And she said like, okay, this relationship has to end. We spoke about a week later and I was like, hey, do you think we should do a closing ceremony? And she was like, yeah, sure. Like, we didn't know what that was, but I Googled it and other people had done something. Yeah,
I did one before.
I was like, are there other crazy people? You
yep,
did?
Yep.
Yeah. See, well done.
We didn't get back together though.
Yeah. Well, I think what is beautiful about the closing ceremony. So we answered three questions. What did we most appreciate about the other person and why? Mm. We lit a fire. Actually, getting back to the dream, we had bought a wooden birdhouse that represented the house and we burned it during the ceremony. Yeah. I get emotional all the time thinking about the closing ceremony because I remember sitting outside in my car being like, I don't want to go in to the house. And I was like, do I not want to go because I just genuinely don't want to do this right now? Or do I not want to go because the person who can do a closing ceremony doesn't exist yet? Mm-hmm. And it was the second answer. And so as I like, I have a commitment to always do the things I'm afraid of that I know I need to do. So I went in. Anyway, so we lit the fire, put some music on that we cared about that was important to us, answered that question. The second question was, what was our favorite memory? Mm-hmm. Oh God, that was the hardest. And then the last question was, what do we hope for the other person? It was profound because we got to experience what is it like to let love go with grace and reverence. That love didn't go anywhere. It actually deepened on so many levels. And everything we'd been taught about society and culture about breakups was like, hate each other, all the things.
Those are the hardest ones, though, sometimes.
Well, because it's easier to get over someone that you hate.
Totally. Yeah,
it's a lot harder to get over someone you really love them.
Yeah.
That was it. It was like this strange paradox where I was like, I love this person so much. And here we are ending.
And you guys lived together at the time?
We did. Yeah, we lived together.
Okay. So you guys were like fully going through all the motions with it, but just it felt off. That was what I'm getting from you. There's something.
Yeah, we were trying to figure out this like felt like 5%, but really it was 95. But it was like we were really trying to figure out like we were committed to each other. Yeah. We really love each other. And so it was like it was a hard thing because here you are. You're like, we have the tools. We have the teachers.
Yeah.
And yet we can't figure this out. There's got to be a way. Mm-hmm. And then I learned a long time ago when I had left my engagement, although obviously didn't, I should have tattooed it. It was like, I just knew that when you're looking for an answer for years, for time, it's usually the answer you don't want to see. So you're trying to find an answer that's anything but what you know.
But how brave is that, that both of you can choose to let go of this relationship? I think very few people can do that in a relationship. I would say my ex cheated on me because he didn't want to make that choice. He wanted to force me into that choice. And you hear this a lot in relationships too. It's like,
yes.
I want to drive this person away so they can break up. They can make that choice for us. So, I mean, that's really profound what you just described and just really brave. And once you two do decide to have this closing ceremony, what was your intention during that time? Because obviously you don't stop loving this person.
I mean, by the time our relationship was done, Kylie and I were quite different. But by the time it was done, I was done. Mm-hmm. Like I had no interest in staying in the pattern. Yeah. I was so done with that pattern of like someone doesn't choose me. Yeah. It had to get to the place where it was. So I immediately was like, look, I love you. I'm going to mute you on every channel. We have amazing mutual friends and we had discussed with them like, okay, if there's a celebration, please just invite whoever can go, but just let me know because I'm not ready to be in the same space. And neither was she. And that was great. Like our friends, you know, were distraught by our own relationship ending, you know, and it was so beautiful because they didn't choose sides, you know, because there was no side. That was what was different.
Right.
So yeah, we went right away to no contact for 3 months. And we had one friend, a mutual, really good friend to both of us, who would kind of mediate some messages that needed to be shared, like logistical things or like, because at the same time, you know, it was December 2019. It started in September 2019. And so, you know, then we spoke again in December. We came back together, had a conversation, connected, and we were like, no, it's not aligned.
Okay.
And then we spoke for about a month. And then I realized I was on this retreat. And on this retreat, I remember I was an attendee. And I remember thinking to myself, like, I'm still in conversation with her. And she's still dictating the level of intimacy and connection. Mm. And I was like, nope. So I went home, FaceTimed her. And I was like, I recognize that this is still happening. You're still deciding. I'm not. I'm deciding. I can't keep in contact with you.
What was like an example of that? Like, what was something that you felt that you're like, I feel like she's dictating the intimacy?
Well, because I had been the one who always wanted more. Mm-hmm. And I was always the one who was like, I want more. But the capacity of the relationship was dictated by her capacity. And I realized I kept being the one who was consenting to someone else deciding the capacity.
Yeah.
So I was like, no, I'm deciding. I don't want to live in a space of longing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when I had that conversation with her, I mean, she's incredible. So she was like, oh, you're right. I am doing that. Mm. Yeah, that's not fair. And so we went back to no contact. And then, you know, COVID starts. And so here I am like thinking the world's ending. And I'm like, well, that's the person I'd want to come over. But you have to have such a deep reverence for the desire to fracture a boundary for whatever reason.
Right.
Yeah.
And I just knew this is not a negotiation. Like my growth is not negotiable. My transformation is not negotiable. I never for once feared that I wouldn't find someone because I knew that all you needed was two people who really cared about growth, who really were curious, who had humility.
Would you say you wanted like more from her? Like, was that marriage and kids or was it like more emotional capacity or both?
You know, it'll show up as the symptom of I want more from her, which the telling of that would make me the victim of her lack of capacity. Mm. But if I was really like, and this is the language that we get to in the book, if I'm really taking responsibility is I wanted more from myself that needed to show up with boundaries and standards from the like what the relationship was capable of doing in alignment. I needed that because without that, she couldn't anyways.
How did you get there? Like, how were you able to flip that? Because I think that's such a pivotal point of this conversation, right? Because we always hear people just being like, I wanted more. They couldn't give it to me.
Right.
How do you take that accountability?
If you want to move to the next level in your life, it's not optional. Because the challenge or the sort of strange juxtaposition of being a victim, but not living in a victim mindset, because that's usually what happens is we'll say, like someone might hear initially without some context what I'm saying, and they would go, oh, that's victim blaming,
right.
You know? But really what I'm saying is you can be the victim of an experience, mm-hmm. right? But it is your responsibility with what you do with the experience.
Yeah.
And we live in this binary world. You're either this or you're that. You're either that. Da, da, da. And this is not binary. This actually is the complexity because someone can have been through ultimate trauma and that experience can have fueled creating the most beautiful thing in the world. And so we're not saying, well, because no trauma, no beauty. And that's not giving permission or anything. And that's usually the sort of, so to like actually make the leap to the full sense of responsibility, because I guarantee there's someone else on a podcast saying, yeah, they couldn't fucking show up. Move on to the next.
Right.
Right.
I'm sure you've seen
that
viral thing where it says, find a man who will.
Yes.
Yeah. It's easy to say that.
Right. And then you flip it around and you say, find a woman who will. And it doesn't sound quite as nice, does it? But it's necessary because without me taking responsibility for my role, I don't allow them the freedom to take responsibility for their identity of brokenness.
I mean, I see what you're saying, but I also see the other side. Like, what's the line? Because we wouldn't want someone that's like in this situationship where the person is not giving them anything to be like, well, I just need to take accountability.
100%.
Like, how do you know
you should.
What's that line? You think you should. Okay.
If you're in a situationship and you want more and they don't, then you are consenting to be in a relationship dynamic with someone where you're actually misrepresenting possibly and not honoring what you truly desire. You're accepting breadcrumbs. You're accepting something less. And then you're the victim of the situationship, but you're not. You are choosing to be with someone who can't show up fully for you, likely because there's a familiar wound. And now you get to say, oh, they just treat me like a girlfriend, but they're not. They're not ready for commitment. Neither are you.
I see what you're saying. You're not saying like take accountability, like try to make it work with them. It's take accountability and like own how you're showing up to this.
Yeah.
Like write on a piece of paper what's true. Like we have a chapter in the book that's called Getting Right with Reality and Breaking Up with Normal. Yeah. Those chapters are like savage takedowns of perception of like fantasy land, you know, because a lot of people who stay in those types of circumstances learn somewhere they couldn't have what they desired. But what happens is we live in the wound of rejection because we stay in circumstances that are rejecting. But I get to blame the guy or the girl when it's really me who's rejecting my desires. So I am the birthplace of the thing that I'm projecting onto them. It's like, this is a really tough one to hold. But I, at this point, I'm going to say 100% of the time, which I normally would qualify something with like 99.9.
I'm bracing myself.
You're going bold. I like it. Yeah.
100% of the time, external betrayals are preceded by internal betrayals. Mm. So infidelities, lying, cheating of someone else, usually, always, is preceded by some sort of betrayal of ourselves. Hmm. And that doesn't mean it's anyone's fault, because that's where we go to, oh, so you're victim blaming the people who've been cheated on. No. What I'm saying is we probably learn somewhere to bypass and betray ourselves to maintain connection. Mm. So we're not villainizing it. We're just calling out the truth of it. I had a friend who was telling me this story about a relational circumstance, and I'm like, okay, we just need to actually connect to the part, what did you choose?
Right. Yes. Right.
And as soon as she was able to own that, this guy cheated with multiple women, secret life, blah, blah, blah. Now you're dealing with, that's a pretty crazy behavior. That's very like, you're getting into like narcissistic, sociopathic behavior. But I was like, where was the earliest sign that you missed a red flag?
Yeah.
And she was like, it was here. And I'm like, is there anywhere earlier? Because till you can get to first moment, that's where you left yourself.
Yeah.
And then the 3-year relationship is just created on the abandonment.
You are what you tolerate. Right? All of that, all the behavior in your life is what you've tolerated in your life.
Amen.
So we got to take accountability for that as well. And I think about the infidelity that you're talking about, Mark. I think about this all the time. It is because I had let go of my needs that gave him permission to forego, to disrespect. Because it's like, it's the whole roller coaster of one day taking me out ring shopping and the next day being like, I'm not sure this is for me.
That's the worst.
I never chose that, right? I never sat there and said, oh, would I choose this for myself? I just sat there and waited and said, why is he changing his mind? Yeah. Everything was on him, but I never turned it back on me and said, am I just abandoning myself by allowing him to make all these choices for us?
So Mark, what was your moment then in this relationship that you were like, I'm abandoning myself? And then how did you take that accountability? And then that eventually moved to a new relationship with Kylie.
It was that moment of the recognition, like I learned somewhere to tolerate being in a relationship with someone who doesn't fully choose me. And it was also in recognizing that like somehow I was getting importance and value by trying to help her. So I was like sourcing safety and security by trying to fix things. So when I recognized that, I realized how unhealthy and unfair that was and the impact that was having on her. And I remember when I said to her, like, what happens if we just see what you're feeling as being signs of your brilliance, not your brokenness? And I remember her just crying because it was like the first time her feeling had been validated. Mm. And instead of us trying to be like, what's next to fix the feeling you have? It was like, let's actually ask it questions. Mm. Let's get curious. Mm. So for me, it was when I had the awareness, it was like, no more. Like when I finally connected to the anger too, like a healthy level of, why am I in a relationship with someone who's telling me about dreams about leaving? Or like, why do we tolerate these? Like, fuck this.
Yeah.
And so when I took that stand, and also had empathy for her need, then she started to trust me on a deeper level, right? Because she's like, he's calling out the truth of our connection and he's actually standing in his non-negotiables. Yes. Ah, now I can trust him.
Okay, this is the part that I'm hearing our listeners ask, like, why try it again with her versus find someone else that, you know, can meet that need and you don't worry that they choose you.
Well, you know, I went back into my relationship history and I realized I ran from every woman who could actually show up and love me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all would have brought our own can of worms, you know, because that's how it works. But
that's what we do.
Yeah. But like, I recognized that like a woman I was terrified of, and I needed to heal and fix these things, like change and get access to my voice and stop sourcing from trying to help and save people. Because it changed my work too. It changed so many things. Because, you know, if you're monetizing your survival strategy, then there's still a part of you that needs your client to need you. Mm-hmm. And that means you're not freeing them. Mm. And so I started to see this, and I, you know, now I've like, I just did a workshop with coaches and nutritionists and dietitians and therapists talking about this like deeper thing that needs to be healed, where we're hooking into the people we're working yes. with. And so it's not freeing them to actually heal.
Right.
Because we're living out the same dynamic and we don't think we are because they're paying us money.
Right. So repeating the same patterns.
Exactly. And just calling it a job. Mm-hmm. And when I started to really step into that and I had the awareness of that, I was actually totally open to Kylie being the person potentially, okay. but she would be the one who had to come to me. Mm. I had no interest in going to her. And she knew that, you know, and she was doing her own personal work during that time. And she was thinking like, I don't want to repeat this. Yeah. Like, I need to figure out what is going on and like get deeper into this, which she talks about in the book. And on some level, like, so I could turn towards a relationship potentially with Mark, but a relationship in general.
Right.
And so she messaged me one day and was like, hey, I'd love to have a conversation with you and catch up. And so she came over.
Mm. How long was this after the breakup?
8 months, 7 months.
Okay. So a lot of enough time has gone by, or a lot of time.
Yeah. This is about 3 months after I said, I'm no longer going to let you dictate the capacity, like the level of. And so she said to me, I've learned a lot. Here's the things I've learned. I'm ready to choose this relationship. And I'm curious about exploring it with you. And so I was like, okay. And I could tell she was different. There was like mm-hmm. a different energy to her. She had that woman swagger now. There was like certainty in her choice. Like I could feel it. I was terrified of it, but I could feel it. And I remember, so we created what we called a dating container.
Okay.
And so we created like structure around it, which it would be 3 months, but by the end of the 3 months and throughout, we would check in, mm-hmm. is this connection working? Mm. Is this actually the right way our relationship should be structured? And it was actually through that, which is really interesting, I started to see how I wanted to accelerate the relationship, like, oh, we're back together.
Yeah, that's the like go-to normally, uh-huh. right?
Yeah, yeah. And she'd be like, well, we're like exploring that, like slow down. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm not ready to choose this.
Right.
Like this isn't still is not a yes for me, but I'm bypassing again my no. Or my maybe. Huh. And so she was so grounded at that time. It was like a little intimidating. She was like Yoda, like a hot Yoda. And she said to me, it was actually really beautiful because I said to her, how do I even trust you?
Yeah.
Like you told me that you chose this. We spent 4 years in this dance. How do I trust you now? Like you're saying it now? Bleh. And she was like, you're right. I'm not going anywhere and I choose you.
Wow.
And I get that you don't trust it yet. And I was like, you know, because it was like everything I needed to hear, yeah. but there was like an embodiment to her certainty, but there was also a reality,
yeah.
which that's the thing we really learned. If we can be fiercely dedicated to the reality that this might not work. There was actually freedom in that. That actually creates a tremendous amount of fear and trepidation for people.
For sure.
But that's yeah. actually freedom because we're saying all of this is true anyways.
Right.
And yeah. so by bringing it, it becomes material that the relationship works with. Like I remember saying to her once in the container, like, this isn't feeling good for me. Here's what's coming up. And she was like, yeah, thank you for bringing that forward. And then we talked about it. And then there's more trust.
I guess like as a listener, I'm still like, what is that difference? What I'm hearing from you is there was a feeling just in the way she asserted herself and the tone and all that. But like, what were the other major changes?
The major change was that neither of us were in our adaptive strategies anymore. Neither of us were in our codependent patterns. They were subtle, like we had to continue to call out where they were showing up. But no longer did I need her to be broken. She was a fully functioning, amazing adult.
Mm.
And no longer did I need to try to fix because I didn't need someone to choose me anymore. I'd chosen myself. I took it off the table.
I see.
So when we orient to our relationship from our wounds, that's very normal. That's what we do till we don't. What happens when, so, you know, we sort of spend our lives choosing people who wound us in a familiar way to a parent who wounded us the most. That's sort of how it works. It is through the thing you want most from somebody in your dating process is actually the thing you must give to yourself. And once you give it to yourself, then you no longer seek it unconsciously from the other, and then you can love each other.
Yeah. I think it's important for anybody listening right now to just pause and rewind and listen to the dating container again, because I think that is how dating should be done. We should be dating in a dating container before we even take that next step, because I think we go from like dating to committing to a relationship, which means committing to let's making this last. But we don't commit to, we're not committing to, I want to express my needs. We're not committing to, I want to honor your needs. Those are not the commitments we make when we define the relationship. That's a huge step that we're skipping.
I think the other big piece too is the fact that like you didn't rush right back into it, because I've been there before where I've broken up with someone, got back together, and nothing changes each time because it's right. You're just repeating the same patterns. I really believe like if you're going to give a 2.0 a try and really make it work, like the fundamentals need to change. You can't just go right back to where it was.
No, that's why the language, like, how do I get back together with my ex? I'm always such a stickler. It's like, don't move forward.
Yeah.
Like be walking forward in your life and they'll meet you walking forward. And whoever meets you walking forward, you won't care if it's them.
That's such a good distinction.
Love that.
It makes such a difference. I remember hearing Alan Watts say, why fall in love? Rise. And it's such a difference, you know, like rise in love. And, you know, like in the book, we talk like our principles of liberated love. One is a fierce dedication to the truth. Another one is honoring each other's path as their own, that we're honoring the sovereignty and choice of the other. And it is actually through doing that, that the relationship becomes a place of expanding ourselves instead of collapsing ourselves. Who wouldn't want to be in a relationship where one of the major intentions is to bring each individual alive more healed, more powerful? Like my wife getting more access to her voice doesn't threaten me because it just makes her more powerful, which is great. It's only when power dynamics are what I'm playing with that is scary or I don't want it.
Let's hold that thought because we have a quick message from our sponsors.
You may or may not have known this, but we actually got our start with our podcast, Dateable. For the last decade, we've been studying modern dating, having thousands of conversations, hearing the patterns, and seeing what actually works or what doesn't. What started as honest conversations turned into something so much bigger. A book, How to Be Dateable, which was published last year with Simon & Schuster, is everything we wish we knew when we were out there dating. The mindset shifts, the patterns, the real talk no one else is saying. So if you're dating or you have a friend, sister, coworker, whoever who is, go grab a copy at howtobedateable.com or wherever books are sold. You can get audiobook, hardcover, or Kindle edition. Because being dateable isn't about changing who you are. It's about finally understanding how you show up. I really like how you were able to share from like the anxious perspective. I mean, if we're going to use anxious avoidant terms, but you know, the person that feels like they're not getting enough in the relationship. I think a lot of our listeners can probably relate to that. And it is so easy to blame the other person.
So easy.
But this, like this taking accountability and, you know, doing it for yourself. Like how else were you both, I guess, able to heal within the relationship? Because I think that's another misnomer is we think we need to get it all together before we meet that person.
Yeah. You know, it was through starting to say, hey, we're going to use this relationship to heal. And so I always think there's the logistical competency part of relationship, right? Like the skill set, the words, the language, the energetics. The other thing is that we healed our nervous systems. You know, like we talk in the book about how the nervous system is actually layered in all of this, because a lot of conversations about relational patterns like anxious or avoidance or attachment, codependency, they don't actually bring into context that you are a mammal who has a nervous system. And a lot of these behaviors are actually encoded in your nervous system. So what's going on when you get super anxious when someone doesn't message you back is really an automated process that's a memory within the nervous system. So we're saying like, hey, let's actually use this to heal that So some of the other ways were through that, just like the awareness, right? Like the awareness of all these things that are going on, awareness of each other's wounds, each other's ways that we get when we're stressed, and taking accountability, a massive amount of just like accountability and humility.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the principles we have in the book is a mutual sense of positive regard for one another, just a deep sense of respect.
So how did you decide, like, okay, we're doing this again? Like, how did you get out of the relationship container and like eventually get married and have a baby? Like, what was that process?
So we were both very excited, and we were excited about what was possible. We survived the 3 months. Trust was being rebuilt, and there was just alignment. And you know, mind you, through all this, all the things are going on in the world. And so there's a deep level of trust as we're navigating that together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once we knew that the previous things from the previous relationship were this material that created a different relationship, now there was just deep trust, and it was like full steam ahead.
And obviously we don't have Kylie here. We'll have to get her for another episode. But like, what was the key work you think she did? Like, what changed within her without having to like feel like she's broken and needs to change?
Well, the closing ceremony and the way it ended was sort of the catalyst to that, because now she was like, okay, I need to get to the root of this. And she talks about it in the book. She did this session with one of our mentors. His name's Mark Wolin, and he's one of the most world-renowned experts in inherited trauma. And he did a session with her. I was saying to Kai, like, oh, you should do, we had broken up, right? So, and I was like, you should do a session with Mark Wolin. And she's like, I don't really need it. And she gets on with him, and he says to her something along the lines of, I'm paraphrasing, but he says, till you heal your family stuff, essentially, man will always be mother. And if you don't do the work, I'll be having this conversation again with you in 2 years.
Damn.
And that really dove her into, I'm not sure if you guys have learned about like the mother wound, which is of course not just mother. It's like mother as like a sort of archetype too. The mother wound, I don't know all the like intricate details of it, but let's say, for example, it's like the unconscious desire for the mother to protect the daughter from being, you know, too powerful because they gave away their own power, but they fear that a powerful woman will be, you know, is not safe in this world, that the mother doesn't allow the daughter to outshine or become more, et cetera.
Oh,
I'm not speaking to her specific dynamic. There's experts on the mother wound that are worth having on, because it's such a, I'm definitely not doing it justice, but that's just sort of like a framework of it. And it's much more complex and more beautifully said by Kai and an expert in it. But what's interesting is when she healed that, she actually did what was called a no man diet, which was guided by a woman who does it still. She runs groups on it, Kendra Kunov.
Okay.
And in that, she entered a 3-month container, no contact, no anything, and no communication with any men, no anything. And she said that she felt like she was dying.
Whoa.
Like she felt like, who was she without the male gaze? Who was she without male attention? Who was she? She saw all the ways she sourced and manipulated and tried to become valuable and important and attractive. But yeah, at the end of the day, what was really, like, if I think about what is at the core of this, and this is a hard truth for our culture to be with, is that ultimately everything comes down to our early childhood and our mother's ability to be attuned to us. Now, granted, there are a lot of societal, environmental, all these factors that get in the way of that. And those are all valid. But at the end of the day, what it just says to me is like, how do we create families, friends, groups that allow the support of the mother to be well resourced so she can be attuned to the child? Because what I'm even saying is like, it's hard when a single mom, a mom working a job, right? Like there's so much, that's why I don't.
Yeah.
What quickly happens is then a woman feels guilty that she couldn't show up fully or life's. So this is not to cause that, but I'm also not wanting to protect anyone from that because it's actually an important truth. I remember talking to my mentor and he said, I was like, so like a caregiver. And he's like, caregiver is a word we use when we want to reduce the amount of pain, knowing that the mother wasn't the one.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, wow, that's true. Like when I felt into that, I was like, that's actually true. We don't. But he's like, if you actually just see that you're replacing mother with caregiver, you're actually protecting them from the experience of knowing their mother wasn't there.
Right, right.
And I was like, holy moly. So, you know, I look at all of it and it's like, well, where do you, fathers, of course, are important. But I remember asking him that, like, the father matters, right? He was like, yeah. This is as I'm a dad, you know? And I'm like, I'm important.
Yeah, but
what was really cool, yeah, as he said, the mother prepares the neural architecture of the child for the world and then hands the child to the father to take them into the world.
Wow. That's beautiful.
Yeah. And when I share that on social media, a lot of the response I got was like, but I take my kid on adventures, but my, and I'm like, I get it. There's so much complexity to the human experience. It's funny that if we don't hear our own experience expressed in a 30-second clip,
I know, it's like, that's not me.
Yeah. And it's like, okay. And I say all this because it's like the work relationally is actually about providing the thing you didn't get. Now, granted, of course, our wounds could be with our father, right? It's not just a blank slate, because a father abandoning, not being available, all those types of things can be the pursuit of unavailability as an adult. But yeah, it's really interesting because, like, when you think about it, what you're really doing, when I finally said no more, is I was attuning to myself.
Yeah.
So we are not destined to a life of poor relating because we had a parent who couldn't show up. Just like your attachment style is a style, it's not who you are.
Right.
It's just what you're prone to when there's insecurity or a lack of safety.
Right.
But can you actually start to attune to yourself, attend to your needs? And at the end of the day, what I think all relational friction is really inviting, and that means any, that could be with food, that could be with your body, that could be with your health on some level, it could be with your job, it could be with your purpose. It's all saying, can you honor who you are? And when you need to, do you have your own back?
So I want to bring this back to your book. In a nutshell, I feel like this is related. What is liberated love?
Liberated love is the celebration and the creation of a space between you and other people, because it's not just going to be romantic. Once you build the template, you're going to change every relationship in your life. You're going to change your life, because what we're saying is you as a human matter. And instead of looking at the frictions in your relationships as evidence of a problem that you have, see them as evidence of the potential that you have. They're just giving you information. If you think about it from the process of alchemy,
right,
it's like you're turning what you see as bad stuff into fucking gold. Liberated love is about actually using love as a path to liberation on every level. And to me, it's like, well, once you do that, once you say to a partner, like, this is what I want to create. Do you want to create that with me? Like, imagine if your Tinder profile said, I want to use this container of relationship to bring both of us alive and achieve our dreams. I'm like, swipe right all day. You know?
Yeah.
Even if you have a fish in a picture. Right. That's a swipe right.
Okay, that's an actionable tip for people.
Mirror selfie.
The fish represents liberated love.
Yeah, exactly.
So putting it into example sake again too, like for you and Kylie, what was kind of that example of like how you turned maybe an issue or something that was broken with both of you into that liberated love, like growth opportunity?
It's now just a way of being.
Okay.
So one of the other principles of liberated love is when something's coming up for one person, it's coming up for both.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's huge.
It's just that the other person might not feel it yet. Mm. And so there's actually, instead of like, oh, that's your problem, it's like, oh, that's ours. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, you're feeling neglected. That's not my experience of what's happening, but tell me more about it.
Mm.
So in internet language, we'd be like, that's gaslighting. It's not. It's just saying like, maybe that's not true for me, but I'm not saying it's not true for you.
Right.
Right.
You know, because really, what is a relationship? It's two truths that can be subjective, that coexist, that through the conversation and dialogue, you create a deeper truth.
Right.
And that one includes the both of you.
You're relating to each other. So if one person feels something, the other person.
Yeah. So then you're not feeling, and then you don't hide it. Instead, the relationship is like, tell us. Okay, like share the thing that's coming up for you, because that's what leads to breakthroughs. Yeah. That's what leads to transformation.
But there's a difference of codependency with that though, right?
Yes. So if you're relating from a place of always having problems and that's how you create connection, that's very different. And that delineation, I think, is pretty felt. Like, you could tell when that's happening. You could tell when someone only connects through criticism. One of the ways that people who have more of an anxious style of attachment, probably some fear of abandonment in there, is they'll want to talk about everything all the time because they don't yet know how to self-regulate and hold on to things a little longer before they engage.
Oh, gosh, there's just so many nuggets in this that I need to rewind and listen for myself.
Yeah.
What advice, we're going to wrap this up very quickly here, but what advice would you give to someone who may be in a relationship like you and Kylie in relationship 1.0, where you're on a relationship escalator? I feel like this happens a lot. You're going through the motions, you're on this escalator, it's going up, but your connection or your feelings may be not catching up with the escalator. Yet, you've moved in, you've met parents, you've merged friend groups. For anybody going through that who's like, I'm so afraid to take myself out of this relationship because we're already on this escalator, what advice would you give to that person?
Well, recognizing that the momentum of life is maybe having you leave your center, right? So you're allowing yourself to go up an escalator that you're actually not ready to go up. And so just being with that truth, like, oh, things are really moving. There's all these indicators. But yet, you know, in a way, this can be a pretty regular pattern for people where they meet their needs with wants. I need you to know I'm chosen. I want you to post me on social media. I need to know that we have a future. Let's have a kid. But what's really not happening is we're not getting to the deeper sense of security. It's like the conversation Kylie and I were having about timing of children was really a conversation about alignment. You know, and so can we create the foundation of security before we create all the other things? Now, granted, you might be listening to this or watching this and you're like, shit, I created all the other things and now I want the security. We sometimes do it in the opposite order. And that's okay, because that's actually what most people do, is do it in the opposite order. They think the milestones actually prove what is only a felt sense.
Wow.
That's very profound. I mean, I think my biggest takeaway with this whole conversation, again, probably to listen to this like 3 times to get it all, but I think the big one that's coming up for me is, you know, behind any unmet need that you have of others, there is something deeper within yourself. And we always talk about this too with dating. It is a mirror into what's happening for you. And, you know, relationships and all of that is a place to heal, but also to recognize what's bringing up for you. Because I think in relationships, you can really have a lot start to confront you. And, you know, the biggest thing with the should you get back with your ex, like I also hate the way that is phrased, but it's like, unless you're both willing to do something different and approach things in a way that actually getting to the root of what the challenge is that you're facing, that's how you know if you should pursue something again. And I loved what you said earlier, Mark, about it wasn't about getting back with my ex. It was moving forward. And if they met me there, then that was the right person, or someone else could have been too.
What a great synopsis.
Yeah.
I'm always brought back. I don't know if I shared this in the book. I can't remember. But one of my favorite lines from Abraham Hicks. Do you know Abraham Hicks?
Mm-mm.
Abraham Hicks, if you can let go of the esoteric nature of what I'm about to say, the actual groundedness in the words are brilliant. Abraham Hicks is a woman named Esther who channels a guy named Abraham. If you listen to Abraham Hicks's stuff on YouTube, you'll be like, holy shit, this stuff is dialed. What's really interesting that she said that has always stuck with me is she said, or he, whenever you say that you desire something, the universe will orchestrate to bring everything into your path so that you can hold it. So if you say, I desire a great relationship, then everything that needs to be resolved for you to create that will be brought into your life. And so that's why I think if we can say, I'm so tired of picking this type of person, good, you should be tired. But what is actually the deeper level of responsibility you can take in this? Where's your role? You know, it's like that. I saw a funny meme the other day that said, the dating pool has pee in it.
I know.
It's so good. But it doesn't all, right? And there's so many stories of people's dating world that disprove our own beliefs about dating. Yeah. And so for me, it's like, what beliefs are you holding and are they helpful? And what work do you need to do? Because that's it, man. That's the hardest stuff. It's like, if you keep attracting unavailable people, you are being invited to actually let go of unavailable people. And to be fair, till you have access to your no, your yes isn't real.
Yeah. That's very much related to my 2 main takeaways. One is the creation stage of a relationship, especially a new relationship. Many of us, in addition to falling in love, we fall into relationships. We kind of just ride it out, see where this takes us. But being intentional about creating what does a healthy relationship look like just for you and I, that's unique to us, is so important in that early stage. And then also the question of, is your identity in a relationship what's holding you back? Your thoughts about, you know, Kylie being the broken one. She thought she was the one that needed help. She had all these issues. Well, I think we have a lot of these identities in our relationships. You know, you've heard the golden retriever and cat, you know, the identities where one person's always the one wanting attention and the other one's like the bitch, you know, like I'll give you attention when I give it to you. And then when you are that, when you assume that identity, you just, what do? You just keep feeding more into that identity. And in fact, your partner also enables you to become more of that identity. So I think it's a great pause for all of us to think, am I identifying myself in a certain way in this relationship that is holding me back? And so just having the mindfulness around how we build relationships is the ultimate takeaway. So thank you for letting us be on your journey of how you and Kylie rebuilt your relationship to a completely new one. You did not go back to your ex. You started a new relationship with a new person, both of you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been quite a journey, that's for sure.
And you can read all about it because there's a whole book about it.
Yeah, we share lots of client stories in the book too, great, which I think is good for people. And the audiobook is actually really special because I'm a big audiobook guy. I don't actually remember the last time I read a hardcover book.
I love
book.
Audiobooks.
And we had unscripted conversations at the end of each chapter where we discuss the chapters.
Love it.
Okay, I'm going to download the audiobook today then.
Yes.
It's so much. It was a lot of fun. And I, you know, the audiobook has been crushing compared to the written book, which is interesting.
Well, we are definitely going to link both in the show notes. Anything else you want to share with people before we wrap up?
I mean, I think the thing I always want to remind people of is that you can create anything you want. Mm. Great love doesn't come to those who are lucky.
Yeah.
It comes to the people who take responsibility for creating it.
That's such a good way to end.
I love that so much.
And if you haven't done so yet, subscribe to The Psychology of Relationships today so you don't miss an episode.
Bye.